What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that come out today.
Yes, they've already come out. It's past tense. It's over.
They're gone.
They're out of there.
They're sold out.
It's too late. No, all you have is our review.
Guys, it's not too late. Let's talk about it.
Our review is like an oral copy of the comic.
It's a record.
Exactly.
In this post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Exactly.
It's a way to recap it, which I think you love.
Oh, I do love it. And you also love it. And you love it because you're listening to it. So let's jump into it. First one from Boom Studios, Ronin Island, number one by
Greg Pak.
So this is an original title. And as you can probably tell from the title of the book, it is set on an island that is inhabited by Ronin and peasants. And some other things get mixed in the way. Things about the world start to unfold as it goes on.
Yeah.
But most of it is involved, focused on this race between two kids who live on the island. I thought this was great.
Yeah, amazing first issue. Really sets up a lot with this foot race. It kind of gives you so much information. This Greg Pak guy really knows how to write.
Yeah, fresh on the scene, Greg Pak.
Yeah.
Just getting his first beard into the game. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm excited about his future.
Yeah, I hope. Maybe he has some comics from his, as he was coming up, that you can check out.
Yeah.
I will say, this was a surprisingly structured first issue.
Yeah.
I really don't think that I've read a first issue exactly like this before. We talked about, this is getting into spoilers here, but we've talked about post-apocalyptic books a lot here on the podcast, and they all seem to have the same structure where it's like, the world was destroyed by ice cream 20 years ago.
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah. And then there's a conflict the other, like, maybe we could get the ice cream back.
Who would have thought underneath the Antarctic melt was an ice cream volcano?
But this is very different. Like, as you said, most of the book is taken up by the foot race. It's very much showing instead of telling in terms of explaining what's going on in the world.
The foot race is between two, like, the sort of young warriors. One, a sort of the
rich,
the best
kid.
Boy from the island, and one sort of an outsider. Woman, girl, who, and they are seem to know each other. Maybe there's some romance there. I don't know.
Well, don't force romance on them. They're
not forcing it.
It seems like you have an agenda. That you're a very big relationship guy, and you're trying to push that agenda.
No, I'm not pushing people to be involved in romance, but I tell you what, it sometimes happens. You ever put two rabbits in a box? I do it every morning before I go.
This reminded me really pleasantly of Avatar The Last Airbender, particularly the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Because it's the same sort of thing where you're just kind of in this world, and then there's an inciting incident that opens up more of the world, but it's so established up to that point, the characters feel so realized that you're just kind of thrown in the middle.
Similarly, this reminded me of the video game, the old-time video game, Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, the Super Nintendo Zelda game.
Yeah.
Because it had that same vibe of just like simple, like kids dealing with this situation, and all of a sudden the world keeps opening up and there's a lot more going on.
Also, this reminded me, I got to be honest, a little more of Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time.
Okay.
Yeah, which is the same story.
We only Interesting. No, there's more flutes in that one.
Yeah, there's more flutes, but it does start off with just him in a village, and then it slowly opens up for there.
What's up with Nintendo and flutes? They're really pushing flutes.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about
Super Mario? When you think about it, it's not even a flute, it's a recorder.
I have a question for you. When you got a Wii, did you get the Wii flute?
Yeah, that's the only one I got.
Oh, okay.
And I tell you what, I really crush it. I'm like,
if we could get back to the comic.
No, this is important. No. When I was in fourth grade, I played the flute, and I was the only boy, and I was also bad at it.
Sorry, I'm getting a fax. Anyways, what I also liked about this was the fact that characters weren't making kind of like trope decisions. They were making some unique decisions based on what's going on. You kept thinking there was going to be a conflict, and it was smart. It was really smart the way it unraveled.
And let's just say, caveat, Pete has been doodling Greg Pak's name on his Trapper Keeper for so many years that he is fully on board with whatever this man will do.
Yeah, if you ship Pocky Pete, this is the book for you.
Pocky Pete!
No, this is great. This is a really fun debut. It's very surprising. Definitely pick it up.
And also, the art's fantastic.
It is. Moving on to another number one from Marvel Comics, Beat the Skrulls, number one.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you like this, Pete?
I thought I was going to hate it. You know, I was like, oh, what a cutesy title, whatever. But it's actually very enjoyable. I like the perspective that it takes.
Now,
very interesting.
This, to me, feels like a Marvel not in a bad way, redoing the Vision comic book from a couple of years ago.
Well, let me throw a side take on it. I think it's Marvel's version of The Americans, the TV show.
I was going to say it's Marvel's version of Meet the Fockers.
One of those three is very wrong.
It's Marvel's version of Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
That's your review. You're talking about Majora's Mask? review of everything. Because it's a family of Skrulls who have blended into Earth, and they are trying to stop this government organization that has this project to find Skrulls so they can hide there. And there's sort of their boss, their Skrull boss, is like, we have to take over the Earth. And I feel like what's going to happen is his family is going to be like, we like Earth. We like it the way it is. We're going to stop this Skrull destruction.
Did you even read the comic?
Yes, I did. Definitely.
No, because that's that's not what happened at all.
No, I know. I'm talking about my prediction for the future.
Oh, okay.
The family will then sort of integrate with Earth and become like on the side of the humans.
I completely disagree. I think there is one character that might be on that side, but the other are so against that and putting their own family member down that I don't see how that could happen.
To get back to it, I think The Americans is an apt comparison because, as we're pointing out, there's a lot of counterfeits and spying and twists that go on here and different loyalties that are going back and forth. It's a really good setup. It feels like something very different for Marvel.
Yeah.
So I do hope people pick it up.
I really liked it. It was a good read, and it does feel like a
gorgeous
different type of story.
Amazing art. I was really impressed with it. Also, it's kind of weird that that movie Captain Marvel's coming out that has Skrulls in it, and then there's this comic that's also
it's like Meet the Skrulls. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's weird.
And I know it's funny that you have Meet the Fockers saved on your DVR, and so that's a weird coincidence too.
Yeah.
I don't know why my DVR into this.
Cat, I watch your DVR.
How do you milk a cat? Is it like
I've got nipples.
That's not quite the quote. It's quite the quote. How do you milk a cat?
Show me where a cat is.
Oh, man.
How do you milk it?
You should probably see that movie again before you quote it.
Okay, so Meet the Skrulls, like drinking cat milk. Moving on to a book from Oni Press, Morning in America, number one.
Yeah.
This is another book from Madeline Visaggio, who we talked about. I'm blagging Calamity Kate from Dark Horse, which is actually still going to come out a couple of weeks from now. But this is delving into spoilers a little bit.
Yeah.
This is about a group of kids at our school. They're kind of the loser kids, kind of the drug selling kids. And there may be some sort of thing coming that is going to destroy the entire world.
There's kidnappings happening in town.
Right.
Kids are vanishing, and the police are surprisingly not interested in solving it.
Yeah.
So that makes me think that that cop is up to something there. But yeah, it is. This was fun, though. I liked the way it was laid out. You get to like meet the kids for a while first, know there's something bad happening, but it's not all like you're given enough information, but it's not all blown out in the first issue.
Also, I really like the voices of the kids. It really felt like, you know, sometimes when you read like a teen drama, it doesn't really feel like the voices of kids. I really felt like they did a good job of getting their voices. I usually don't like books like this, but I was actually impressed with this book.
Yeah, nice. The cover pays tribute to They Live, but to me it feels a little more like The Faculty or something like that.
Interesting, yeah.
In terms of there's clearly something super bad and maybe supernatural happening below the surface. They talk about alien invasions a little bit, but it's a fun riff on that. I'm really excited to see where it goes next.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to a DC comic, Doomsday Clock, number nine. Now, this is a big issue of this book. Every single hero in the DC universe, except for the ones that have been knocked down for the count, go to Mars to confront Dr. Manhattan.
Dr. Manhattan.
I was about to say Mr. Manhattan.
No, good.
But that's you.
They go, that's me. I'm Mr. Manhattan. Baby, let's roll some dice. Mr. Manhattan.
Yeah. I appreciate your branding.
Yeah. Thanks for saying again at the end there.
That's me.
So they all go to confront Dr. Manhattan. So finally we get that big reveal of him and his powers and everything that's going on. We get much more clarity about what's been happening in the background with the Superman project, the superhuman project that has ripped the world of the DC universe in half. How'd you feel about this one?
I like this issue. I mean, my complaint about this series throughout has been like, you're being so coy with information that we don't know how to read this.
Right.
And they're slowly revealing a lot of information, but they still aren't telling us enough yet. And it's one of those books, and this happens a lot, where like, when you find out the big reveal at the end, the whole story makes sense, but it makes it hard to enjoy, especially nine consecutive issues of this being this way. But on the other side, I love the Firestorm stuff. Firestorm's one of my favorite characters that we never really see. Good Firestorm origin commentary. I like the way being inside Dr. Manhattan's head is cool. Just yep. It's written well. It feels like the original Watchmen. Yeah, that's my take.
No dog, though. No dong. That was a bummer.
Well, but someone talks about how he has dongs.
They do talk about his dong, and they curse a lot. Guy Gardner, finally, all the bleeps take it off.
Yeah, finally, what I've been waiting for. I feel like that might be the reveal, is the bleeps are fully off.
Oh, bad.
Yeah, so this, it's a little maddening, because you don't know as much as you would like, but also very interesting. And, yeah, I was less angry after reading this one than I have in previous issues. But I definitely had to kind of reread things a little bit to get it.
Did you like how Batman's whole thing was trying to send a text and it didn't go through?
Yeah, dude, I've been there, man. Where you're just getting the three dots.
Where you're on the train or something like that. Yeah, no, three dots if somebody's not responding to you.
Right.
Or they are responding to you, technically.
Right. They're responding, but they don't want to say anything.
Well, they're writing something often.
Sure.
The three dots.
And eventually, well, the worst is you get the three dots, and then they go away. And they're like, oh, they're not going to say.
And then they come back for a little bit for like a couple of hours. And then finally, several days later, it's like, LOL. You're like, what was the fucking big deal? Just text me, you know?
You need to put your phone down a little bit. Why are you watching that? Who are you waiting for text
in weeks. In weeks.
But yeah, I also liked his curiosity with the ring and magic. That was really cool.
Yeah. Good take on
it. Yeah, it's interesting to finally see. Like, we've seen some of the other Watchmen characters interact in the DC Universe, but this felt like it was on a very different level and a much more interesting level. Also, we had a big reveal about why all this is going on, and big spoiler, but basically he took Alan Scott's lantern and moved it 5 feet away.
Six feet. I think it was six feet
away?
Yeah. Mm, okay. Good, big difference.
Whatever it is.
Maybe in the dimension you read it, it was six. Whoa. And Alex, it was five.
And so I think what we're talking about and what Geoff Johns is playing with here is the idea of little changes having big impacts, the butterfly effect in a sense.
Definitely. And we've seen Dr. Manhattan be Manhattan, but have we seen him be a doctor?
Oh, that's true.
That's what I'm hoping for.
I would love to see that in the last issue.
Yeah.
His lives, his loves, his healing.
Is he a medical doctor or is he more of like one of those fake doctors?
He's an...
What are you talking about, like Dr. Dre?
He's a paradoxist. No.
What is Dr. Dre's degree?
Anatomy?
Doctor of music.
Oh, okay, good.
Wait, what? What about Dr. Teeth? Is he a doctor?
I don't know who that is.
I would think he's a dentist.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not, though.
He's a doctor.
He's a podiatrist.
Wow, that's fucked up.
Weird.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Doomsday Clock. Moving on to an Image Comics book, Deadly Class, number 37. Now, if you are a fan of Deadly Class, you should definitely check out our Deadly Class podcast, Deadly Cast, available in its own podcast feed.
Indeed.
But this is where it all started, where it all came from, the comic book Pete's Raising His Hand, which means it's question time with Pete LePage.
Yeah, guys, let me ask you something. Are you enjoying the comic more now that the show is out?
I didn't read the comic before the show came out, so I definitely am. Yeah, definitely. It was a void in my life that has been filled.
Ooh. Wow. Because I am. I've read the comic before the show, and now I'm really kind of enjoying the comic more while the show is going on. It's kind of, which is new, because usually it's like either the comic's inspired by the show, and then it, you know, kind of messes up the comic a little bit, or you kind of wonder.
You had that experience with the Grey's Anatomy comic, where you were like, you're kind of enjoying it. Then you started watching the show for 14 seasons, and then you came back to the comic.
Oh, man. Yeah. Grey's Academy 1000, issue 1000 is going to be really exciting.
Oh, man.
They're going to tie together a lot of threads.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty
I'll tell you what, it makes a lot of sense for that show to be comic book based, because those people are fucking dying every minute and barely surviving.
I don't know what you're talking about. Never watched it. Right, Deadly
it
Class, though. So Saya is on the, well, not on the run until the end of the comic book, but she has been captured by her gang, which has been taken over by her evil brother. And slowly she's taking it back. This issue is great.
Like, so good. The art is so good.
Wes
in this
Craig.
One.
Yeah. Wes Craig. The way that he draws action, the way that he draws, exaggerates characters is fantastic. Yeah. And on Rick Remender's end, the way nobody writes evil fucks the way that he does.
Yeah. So good.
You know, like the most evil people in comics.
Where does he get all these dark thoughts?
Where does he get these wonderful toys?
Exactly. The twist at the end was fucked up, and it was really good and surprising.
Yes.
It's rare. I feel rare. I'm surprised rarely, and this is a good
What I would say
surprise.
Is this is one of those issues that connects to bigger things with the title overall, but if you are enjoying the TV series, you could probably pick this up and get right into it and understand what's going on. It's great.
It's
absolutely
really great.
Fantastic. Moving on to another Marvel comic book, Domino Hotshots number one. Now, this is picking up kind of where the Domino series left off.
With the same crew.
Yeah, it's the same crew, adding a couple more, including Black Widow and others. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
I've been reading the other the original Domino title, and it's great. Gail Simone writes Domino really well, and I love the way the characters who Domino has gathered around her are really interesting, and they all serve a role that I think is great. And you really feel how much Domino cares for each of them in each issue.
Yeah, also I really liked the kind of Black Widow juxtaposition to Domino, and how like Black Widow would need Domino and value her. And I thought it was really cool the way they met and the test and all that kind of stuff. That was pretty neat.
It's an interesting mix of characters that you wouldn't necessarily expect or even necessarily know. You know, some of them are super obscure, but they all have distinct personalities. They're all there for a purpose. The enemy is super weird.
Yeah.
Super Kirby-esque and strange, which I really enjoyed a lot. This is a great title. You should definitely pick this up.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to another Image comic book, Die, number four. We've been loving the series from Kieran Gillen. This is about a bunch of kids who were in a role-playing game-style land. Horrible things happened to them. They left for decades. Now they're stuck back there again and exploring the land. This is the issue that takes place at the inn, basically. Like, this is exploring the typical fantasy inn. Another great issue of this book.
I want this comic to just run for, since the Wicked and the Divine is sort of ending, I want this to be the next thing that it just runs for a long, long
time. This was my favorite issue.
Like, oh, really?
Especially the way it ended, I was like, yeah, because to me, as someone who doesn't play Dungeons & Dragons and stuff like that as much, like, it just always seemed, I don't want to spoil anything, but it just always seemed weird that the way like someone else sets up the rules and then everybody else has to follow them.
Well, you got
to
follow the dice, like Mr. Manhattan. Roll the dice, Mr. Manhattan. Yeah,
great.
Oh, man, where's the game this week, by the way?
the dice game? Yeah. On the streets of Manhattan. Come and find me, Mr. Manhattan.
Oh, God. This is a great bit.
Not a bit.
Wow.
Real.
Did you play Legend of Zelda Mr. Manhattan?
Funny enough, I have not. I gotta check that out.
You live it. You
don't I play bet it. You'd like it.
But I really love where this is going. To me, they did a great job of like picking up steam to this issue, and I'm very excited to see where this goes from here on out. Because I was kind of like reading it and very, very much enjoying the choices they were making. The artwork's amazeballs. This completely shifted into another gear with this issue.
Awesome. Very cool. Moving on to another Marvel comic book, Amazing Spider-Man number 16HU. Now, gotta love that numbering structure.
Yeah.
This takes place after issue 16. As we all know, you go to the number 16, then the number HU, and then the number 17.
What?
Yeah.
So that's how it works. What do you mean?
What does HU mean?
It's short for Hunted.
Oh, okay.
But this is an additional comic.
Right.
There's a 16 and there's a 17, and this exists between the two.
Right.
Okay. It was also weird that it was called Amazing Spider-Man, but it's really Amazing Black Cat.
Sure. So
all of that sort of clunky setup aside, this was a great...
Whoa. We practiced that for
I don't mean
hours.
Your setup was clunky. I mean the fact that when you're like, hey, comic book retailer, what is this comic? They have to be like, well, here's what happened. Amazing Spider-Man...
Thanks for not
Blackhead.
Making fun of me.
I would never. I would never.
That's not the Mr. Manhattan way.
No, Mr. Manhattan. Nice guy, Mr. Manhattan.
Oh, God.
This was a great issue. Nick Spencer's writing this, and the Black Cat has sort of a weird continuity. She was made evil, I think, in a crossover in the same way that Havoc was made evil.
Oh, was she?
I think so.
No, I think the idea was that when Spider-Man erased, magically.
That's the way it's explained in the issue, but I think that was an extension of...
They talked about that in the Amazing Spider-Man run. Yeah. That she, what was they called? Reversals or whatever it was? Twist-a-maroos?
No, it's not, definitely not that, but something similar. Oh, goof around.
If I remember correctly, I think it was just because Brian Michael Bendis wanted to turn her into the queenpin of crime.
Right.
And that's why she became evil.
Whatever it was, I never liked that. Black yeah. Cat is always sort of like, she is Spider-Man's Catwoman
right.
At the end of the day.
What?
And right there on the nose. And this was such a great explanation and exploration of that sort of continuity, forced continuity on her that she was evil and now she's good. And it's because she had these great memories with Peter Parker and lost them. And now they're coming back and she's feeling those feelings she had for him. I loved it.
Yeah, and of course you loved it. Who haven't been reading Amazing Spider-Man, what's going on is that Kraven is going to be running this insane hunt, working with actual hunters and Arcade to create a bubble over New York City. He's going to release all of the animal-themed supervillains in there and let regular people hunt them to death. So that's the setup there. This is yeah. playing in between pages of issue 16. We'll show you a couple of things that are going on with other characters and illuminate a little bit more of the plans that Kraven has going on. This crossover is great. I was not expecting a lot as they were leading into yet another Kraven story, but this is so bananas over the top and weird. It feels to me like Maximum Carnage, except with Kraven, and I kind of love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really like this issue as well. It was cool to kind of get Black Cat's kind of take on everything, and I like what they're setting up for her and Spider-Man moving forward.
Moving on to another Image Comics books, Unnatural number 8. Now, this is, we reviewed the first issue of this, right?
Right? That's right.
So the idea of this book, it takes place in a world where there's a bunch of animal creatures. What are you doing, Pete? Why are you looking?
You know why I'm looking at you.
I know why
you're looking. Exactly. You know what he's into.
You love the weird sex stuff, man.
No,
you
that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
Listen, we talked about it with the first issue, though. The idea of the book is it takes place in a world where these animal human type things are only allowed to marry inside of their species. And our main character, who is a pig, finds out that she's having weird. I don't know how to
characterize. Well, how would you say it?
Dreams, just regular, dreams. You know, dreams.
They're regular dreams.
Yeah, regular dreams.
For a 12-year-old boy. Yeah. I guess you could say. Correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, you don't store this comic in a bag and board. You just hide it under your mattress. Right? That's where the best, safest place to save it.
I've been reading this.
Of course you have.
Yeah, we know you have.
Yeah, there's a reason it's in
reading.
The stack.
I've been reading this.
Hold on. Yeah. So this title has actually been building up this intensely complicated.
Building up
intensely complicated mythology going on behind this world. It's been very interesting to delve into.
The different social factors that it's appraising.
Just Pete's laughing hysterically right now.
Well, this is like the telltale heart where Alex hears this beating heart, but it's about his like weird sexual fantasy.
The art's really good in this book. The story's really good in this book. This one really blows it open. Shut up.
We didn't even do anything.
In terms of what has been going on with the plot, it really changes things. It's the end of the second act. I'm really enjoying this book. You guys can fucking die.
How much are you enjoying it?
It's pretty explosive, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, this comic, as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, okay. But it is, you know, it's interesting. The art is very anime, which I think feeds into why we think it's a pervy Alex thing. Yeah. Or just, I guess we call that an Alex thing now. But the premise is fun, and I don't know what's happening because I haven't read the other ones. Because I have a different sexual fetish than Alex.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is weird. But, you know, I kind of, I understand what's happening. And, you know, you're rooting for the main character to kind of make it out of this thing without, you know, too much weird stuff happen to her. But, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, listen, this is a European comic, you guys. And they just
that's cool, Alex. I think they're different. Wow, you're so European.
About these sort of things.
Yeah, man, it's cool.
Yeah.
Whatever you're into, man.
We should say Alex is wearing like very loose fitting shirts, like parachute pants.
Oh
beret, smoking a cigarette
over here. Yeah.
This book is very good. Definitely pick it up. We all agree. Last one we're going to talk about from DC Comics. It's a last issue, Green Arrow number 50.
Oh, man.
Now, I got to be honest. I have not been keeping up with this book very well.
Me neither. But
I like this issue a lot. I thought this was very well done. This is Green Arrow. He's been given a box by John Johns that seems to have some sort of key to taking down the Justice League. Everybody is trying to get the box. He's trying to protect the box. There's a big reveal at the end and then another big reveal, but it wraps up this phase in Green Arrow's life. And I thought it was a really good story, particularly if you're a fan of the character.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm a huge Green Arrow fan. I'm sort of the resident Green Arrow guy.
Yeah, you're always watching the show and talking about it and stuff.
What's that?
Supergirl.
No, I feel like Green Arrow is more of a comic book character. You know what I mean? No. That's where we really have time to talk about him. But the art I thought was great in this book. I didn't buy Black Canary and Green Arrow fighting so much.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I was like, she's going to get him killed at a point, and they're a couple.
They were a couple. They're kind of, they have their ups and downs.
Relationships.
Like
they're an on again, off again.
I agree with you. What I took away from it, though, is it probably would have made a little more sense if we read the previous couple of issues.
That's definitely true.
Leading up to it.
A lot of things in life.
Yeah.
What you're talking about.
I loved it. I really liked the choices. And also, it was very cool. I really liked the ending. Green Arrow as a character kind of struggles and sometimes has misses. And this was kind of like a great kind of summary of the character with those last couple of panels, so close yet so far. I can relate. And I just feel like it's a really good book. And, it's sad to see it kind of end,
No one puts Arrow in a corner, Pete.
Okay.
Except for you. With your Arrow Corner.
Right.
All right, guys. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll chat about Green Arrow or something.
Yeah, whatever Alex wants to talk about.
Yeah,
and I think
that's going to be.
What else do you want to plug, Pete?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And we'll see you at the video game store for picking up Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Wow.